Welcome, my friend. You are listening to Read Clean YA with CJ, the podcast for teens and young adults who want to explore exciting worlds, deep themes, and epic stories without the objectionable content. I'm your host, award-winning young adult author, CJ Malacy, and in this episode, we are going to dive into an author interview with middle grade author C.P. Landry. C.P. Landry is a lifelong resident of South Louisiana and a descendant of the original French Acadians, now known as Cajuns. His wife of 40 years shares a similar heritage as the fifth generation to hunt, trap, and fish the marshes of the Atchafalaya River Basin. Together, they raised their five children to respect their heritage and land. The Cajun Kids Adventure Series is loosely based on the experiences, challenges, and shenanigans of his children's unique upbringing. Chris, welcome to the show.
It's good to be here.
I am so thrilled to have you. For our listeners, I had the privilege of meeting Chris and his lovely wife, Jade, at a homeschool convention this past summer. We were booth neighbors, booth buddies. I don't know how you want to call it, but it was wonderful. We got to chat in between talking with readers and people who were at the conference, and it was so much fun getting to know them. And I've been looking forward to getting to have this interview with Chris today, and I can't wait to introduce all of you to his Cajun Kids Adventure Series. So, Chris, if you don't mind, would you share with our listeners a little bit about your books?
Our books are loosely based on our five kids' real life growing up at the mouth of the Atchafalaya River. When they were little, we lived a very strange life. I worked in the oil field, and lots of time I would work a lot of days and have days off. And we would go down to this place called Willow Hammock at the mouth of the Atchafalaya River. And it is 17 miles by boat from the nearest piece of concrete. So it's out in the middle of nowhere. That's where they grew up. And we had all kinds of strange happenings and crazy happenings and dangerous happenings. Of course, hurricane season always brought their own share of dangers. And when they were little, probably about the age that they are in the books, the characters' age, I started writing little short stories about these five little crazy Cajun kids. I let them each pick their own character name, which I later let those names stay in the book as they were.
Oh, wow.
I was able to create the storyline based off of that. It was fun being able to take their little adventures and just embellish them with these big adventures. I let the children get involved in some of the storylines and some of the different things. And most of our books, actually all of them up until now, are loosely based on a real life event that we just took it to the next level and embellished it up.
That's so neat. It makes it come to life in a new way, I'm sure.
Yes.
Because you know, oh, this actually happened.
And I think that's one of the reasons I enjoy, I didn't know I was going to enjoy writing this much. Yeah. But because it is realistic fiction, I don't know, I just feel at home writing realistic fiction. I've read fantasy in the past and sci-fi. I don't know if I could get that creative. You know what I'm saying? So it's fun for me to be able to write realistic fiction, to take this, the little stories and just to kind of, like I said, embellish them up and just make them a little bit bigger than life.
Yeah. And it's so neat too, because you and Jade both grew up in the area that you're writing about, right? So your
Absolutely.
History there goes back, and to allow other readers, you know, I'm from Pennsylvania. I have never been to Louisiana. I've never experienced these locations, but you allow readers to come and enter into those adventures and experiences, places and smells and all of the things that we might not ever travel to. Maybe we will, but who knows? I think one of the coolest parts of realistic fiction is that it does allow for that.
It allows for that travel. Yeah. Well, yeah. You feel like you're going somewhere. And one of the things I enjoy doing is blending in a little bit of our Cajun culture into the books. I was very hesitant to call the book Cajun Kids Adventures. We had come up with the name, and then at the last minute, we had already got our copyrights, all that kind of stuff. And I said, I don't know if this is going to work. I didn't want to regionalize our books. I didn't want them,
sure.
I didn't want people to think, oh, it's just a Louisiana book. And I had several friends said, no, you need to keep it because children everywhere are going to want to know about the Cajun way of life, about what children growing up in that area of the world, what do they do? So I enjoy blending in some of our Louisiana Cajun culture in with the books. And I love to create the image. In the opening of book one, it talks about it. It's going from fall to winter, which down here is just an amazing time because one of the scenes I actually write, animals that were invisible all year long suddenly come to life. Because down here, when the marsh dies, we can go 6 or 7 months without seeing a deer or beaver or some of these animals. But the day that we get our first freeze and the marsh dies, like the whole new world opens up with the animals you start seeing everywhere. And I love taking those kind of visuals and putting them in words so that you can kind of, I don't know, feel that when you're reading.
Yeah. Oh, I love that so much. What are some other Cajun elements that have gotten incorporated in that you've gotten to weave into the story?
Food, of course. Yes. Absolutely food. We talk about cooking gumbo and we talk about frying fish. The kids go fishing on the dock and catch fish. In the book that comes out this coming summer, it takes place in the springtime during our spring floods. It's called Dangerous Waters. And of course, there's a crawfish boil in there, you know? So
yes.
We love blending in the food. We love blending in Louisiana history. I love talking about the Chittimacha Indians, which is the Indian tribes that inhabited our area, and talk about the Chittimacha means people of many waters. It's just and talking about how they grew up in the bayous and the marshes, and just blending in a lot of that Louisiana history is just a lot of fun. And I enjoy adding historical fiction, actual historical fiction to my books. Not only are you reading to be entertained, but you're actually learning and you're developing that culture and being part of it.
Yes, I love that. When I was growing up, you know, history can be hit or miss depending on who's teaching it. But when you open a book that has historical fiction in there, it really brings history to life. It kind of makes it interesting, exciting. It's real people who lived these crazy things. And it's neat to be able to experience it through a story.
Absolutely. You know, in one of my books, we talks about the buffalo, how the Indian tribes of the Southeast, even as far as the Seminoles in Florida, would come to South Louisiana to hunt buffalo on their migration. And my brother, who's 2 years older than me, at the time he was 64 years old, calls me up and says, "All right, did you make that up or is that real?" And I said, "No, we really had buffalo in Louisiana."
Wow.
You know, because the buffalo of the Oklahoma Plains would do a winter migration to find green grass. It would take them across the Sabine River and then down all the way to South Louisiana. They would cross the Sabine lower by Houston and go all the way back up. And most people, when they read that in the book, they go, "I never knew we had buffalo in Louisiana. I always thought that was a Western thing." So and they would have blend in that. And I heard a lot of little comments about that. People go, "That's so cool. I never knew that."
Yes. Oh, I love it. And for kids, it's fun because they can go tell their parents, "Hey, this is real. This happened."
You know? Exactly.
It's always fun for a kid to know something more than their mom and dad, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
So. Oh, I love it. So you have several stories now, but are there certain themes that you're passionate about incorporating into your stories that you love to show to your readers?
I love blending in character building and family values. I love being able to take that story. And when a child's reading it, I want to get into their minds and go, it's okay to stand up. It's okay to step out and to do something that's, you know, outside the norm. My book 4, that Storm Clouds that came out, it's of all the books I've written, that's my favorite because you kind of see the kids grow up in front of your own eyes. And I just love the fact that they're stepping up to do things that you didn't teach them. You know, as parents, as parents of older children now, I've watched my children throughout my life step up and do these things that I go, wow, I didn't even teach them that.
Wow.
That, you know, it's a God thing.
Yes.
And I love being able to take those moments. And in book 4, I've taken some of the things that I've watched my children do during hurricane evacuations or during hurricane cleanups, where they just took it upon themselves to go do something that impacted people. And I've blended in a lot of those stories with book 4 in that. And that's probably of all the things I enjoy the most. I love being able to tell kids, enjoy being a kid, but realize there's times when you have to step up and make those tough decisions and make the right ones.
Yeah. One of the things I talk about on this podcast quite frequently is how stories can just give us a picture of life in a different way, or, you know, they preach a sermon to us in some ways better than a sermon for some hearts, you know, because it gets to our heart, it touches us and it calls to something deep within us. It touches our emotions and we get invested in these characters and then we watch them do something and it can be inspiring, you know, to see these young characters step up and do something courageous or a little scary because they know it's the right thing, or that might get them ridiculed or whatever, and they do it anyway. And then to see the character growth and development that happens when you make those decisions, because life is built on the daily decisions that lead up to those big moments. And I think one of the reasons I love writing is because I get to watch my characters do that, watch them grow through their little decisions to the point where they can now make this big decision and do something that they maybe couldn't have done earlier in the book or in the series, you know, but they've grown and their characters developed and now they have courage to do something that they couldn't before.
Right. And not only courage, but also just trying new things. Reading a great review we got a few months ago was a dad who said his daughters had read my book, both his daughters. And he said, we're city people. And he says, we don't go in the woods. And he says, but my girls go to the park now and they go exploring. They go look under the trees to see what they can find. Because in my books, the characters are always exploring. They're always going to look for things. And he said, my city kids now, when they go to the park, act like they're in the wilderness. You know, they act like they're out there searching for. And so to be able to, when I hear that, I just know that there'll be a day when they won't be city kids and they're going to remember that moment, you know, and so that's fun.
Yeah, it breaks out of the normal routine and the things we have as part of our daily lives that are just, that's how we do it. We don't explore like that. And then you read a book and you're like, wait, but I can, even though I'm in the city, I can look under rocks and under behind trees and see what else there is.
Exactly. So.
That's so fun. And you said, so character building, and there was another theme. I'm not sure if we touched
family
on
values.
Family values.
Yep. Mom and dad are involved in their lives. They're alive. First off, most books in our age group, the children are either orphaned or the parents are non-existent. Mom and dad are not only alive, but they're engaged in their lives. They turn to mom and dad when they have questions or when they need help. So I love being able to do that. And just the respect that between the parents and the children, where the children, of course, respect the parents, but the parents also in the story, as a parent, children don't see the respect we have for them because we're the dominant authority. We're the ones who are making decisions and doing all this. But I think children need to realize that they're respected by their parents, and it's a mutual respect. And I love being able to take the fact, growing up, I probably didn't tell my kids as much as I should have how much I respected their decisions and the things they made because I thought I was guiding them. It was a thing where, as a parent, you're getting up every day, you're teaching them, you're guiding them, you're showing them the ways of life and kind of taking them through this thing called life. And you don't realize, I think if I could go back, one of the things I would do with my children is to be able to tell them more how much I respected what they did. Because as a parent, we think we're teaching, but we don't realize that they're not only learning, but they're growing in what they're doing. So I like the fact that children respect the parents, parents respect the children. There are scenes in our books that where it's mom and dad talking and it's saying, you know, we need to think about what they said. We need to things that conversations we had, our children never knew we had. And then we would come back with a decision, but the children never knew what went into making that decision. So I like to take little scenes like that where mom and dad are talking. You know, in book three, there's a situation where the middle son's imagination, he's a storyteller. He's the one that sees a 3-foot fish snake. And by the time he gets back to the houseboat, it's a 12-foot anaconda because he has this wild imagination. Well, there's a scene in there where the two parents are talking and they say, you know, he grew up out here. We know he saw something. Mm-hmm. And we can't completely discount what he saw, but we also can't let him go on telling stories that aren't true. And there's a very deep conversation between the parents to give the children, the reader, a chance to go, mom and dad have to deal with these situations too. It's not just us as children and siblings. And I love being able to take that and doing that family value of the mutual respect between the parents and the children.
Mm. And what a powerful value to weave in a culture where it is so broken. Families aren't what they should be. But then there are parents, many parents who love their kids. And it's so good for kids to be reminded of that.
Yeah. So.
No, and you're right. There are so many books where it's the orphan child or the parents who abandoned them. And, you know, there's something powerful to having a full family unit. And for the kid who is from a broken home or who doesn't have that, it's good for them to see what God intended as well, because God did intend there to be a mom and a dad and that family unit and that mutual respect and conversations between the parents and between the kids and all of that. And so even if it's a kid who maybe doesn't experience that in their personal life, to understand that that longing in their heart is from God because he intended family to be this way.
And something that they can carry on in the future just because they came from a broken home doesn't mean they have to have one. It's something they can step in and say, okay, this is the way I should have done it. This is the way. And for them to take hold of that respect and just carry it forward.
Yeah. And break some of those cycles.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are wonderful themes. And it's the same characters throughout the whole series, right? The same five kids.
Yep. Same five kids. You know, we blend in some some new characters. And
of course,
one of the things I put in every book is I put a figure of authority. In book one, they work with a sheriff's deputy. In book two, they work with a wildlife biologist. And so I kind of, I do that for the same reason. I kind of blend in someone book four, they meet a young Coast Guard lieutenant, but I like to blend those characters in to build that respect for authority also. So they're always learning. And the fun part is learning what they do. You learn, you not only get to know them, but you get to know their jobs and why they do what they do. In our book that just came out, they work with a young lady who's a wildlife and fisheries enforcement agent. And she tells them about her job. You know, she says, I'm not out here because I want to write someone a citation. I'm out here to protect the environment that our children and our grandchildren are going to be in one day. You know, it's kind of build that respect for authority, which also I think we lack so much today. You know, I mean, I remember as a kid seeing an officer of the law or a firefighter, and it was an immediate respect for what they did. And I think we lack that today.
It's true. It's sad. And yet it's important. I think stories can be a way to kind of remind young readers that that's important and to show, you know, God did call us to respect every person in authority in the government and, you know, the positions, because ultimately he's the one in control of the people who have those positions of authority. And it's important to honor God by honoring and respecting the people who he has given those positions to.
Correct.
Those are all very interesting, different kind of careers even and positions of authority. Did you talk to people who had those careers, or did you just research in a different way?
So we lived a crazy life. You know, we've always had wildlife and fisheries agents at our camp since for my entire life. You know, I know several of them personally. Same thing with patrol officers in our area. You know, we had a patrol officer that ran our area for over 30 years, similar to the character in the book. I was able to do that. And then we worked in the oil field. We worked in aviation logistics. So a lot of the people that I worked with were all ex-military. There's a scene in the book about pilots and what pilots do and things like that. So I've had to definitely been blessed my entire life to be around those type of people that I was able to learn from what they do. But I do call on different people from time to time to, if I'm doing a scene about something, and I'll pick up the phone and call a friend and say, hey, isn't your brother-in-law a state biologist? Yeah. Can I ask him a question? You know, so little things like that where I can pick up the phone and make, of course, with Google nowadays, you can.
It's true.
You know, with researching now is just so simple. But to get that personal effect and that personal feeling towards something, it's fun to be able to talk to somebody, you know.
Yes. So. Definitely.
Especially when you tell them that you want to write a character in a book and you're going to base it off what they think, they get excited. They're like, oh, well, I would love to do that, you know?
So, yes. Oh, I love that. So we've talked about the different themes and stuff, and you've touched on this a bit, but if you were to say, what would you say you want your reader to take away when he or she closes the book? Like, what's something that you hope they take with them into their lives?
I think number one, I want a child to get lost in the adventure. That's number one. If they don't get lost in the adventure, they're never going to take anything else away from it. They have to, I think when a reader picks up a book, they have to be able to become part of it. When they become part of it, all the beautiful little things that we blend into our storylines that all authors do then become part of them. So the number one thing is, I just want a kid to open up a book and then forget what time it was or realize they're late for supper or they're past bedtime because they got lost in the story. And for me, that was the number one thing I wanted to do. I just wanted to create a story that when a kid picked it up, they could feel like they were there. They would be reeling in that big old fish with Timmy, the character Timmy, you know, and to feel that. And I think we've captured that emotion with some of the children that we're meeting now coming back and going, you know, and so that's probably that's the most important thing to me because I don't believe any of the things as writers and authors, we always try to blend in, especially, you know, Christian authors and people who write books about values and character. We always want to throw out those little nuggets. But the nugget is not going to get picked up if they're not on the journey with us. You can drop those little gold nuggets all the way down the trail, but if they don't get on the trail with you, they're not going to see them.
Yeah.
So that's the number one thing for me.
I absolutely love that. I love how you said it and everything. And I couldn't agree more. If they're not lost in the adventure, then they can't take something from the adventure with them back into their lives.
Correct.
I think that is an important thing to remember, even for myself, as I'm working on my stories. I love that. Thank you for sharing. I had one time, I think this was one of my favorite emails I got, although it's a little funny, but I had a mom reach out to me and we had met at a homeschool convention and she got the books for her kids, my books for her kids. And she said her one son started reading them, and then he wouldn't put it down. She said, I had to get him to pack for vacation. I had to take the book away from him because he refused to do anything else but read. And I was like, well, I'm sorry he got in trouble, but I'm so glad he was so into the story. I get it. Like when they get lost on that adventure, there's something that's when the story can be a transformative part of their journey than in their own lives too.
For me, I feel the exact same way. There's nothing more of a compliment than finding out a child got in trouble because they wouldn't put your book down. You're right. It's something we go behind, after they turn their back, we go, yes.
Exactly. So, kind of like, I'm sorry, but I'm not too sorry.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
So. Yes. Yes. No, I love that. And I think these kind of adventures are just what kids need in this crazy world we live in. So I love that you are creating them for these kids and giving them a reason to get lost.
Yeah. And just let a kid be a kid. You know, we don't put any really, I challenge the children. I challenge them on right and wrong, and I challenge them on certain things, but I just want them to be a kid. I want them just to pick up a book we have a lot of humor in our books. We have five siblings and I based a lot of the humor off of my real five children growing up. So there's a lot of just fun, laugh out loud humor. We were at the conference we were at where we met you, yes. One of the people down the hall, hall from us, they had got our books at a previous conference, and she says she heard her daughter laughing in her room by herself, and she says, wow. Well, she doesn't have a cell phone, what is she doing? And she walked in and she was reading the opening scene of our book 3, and she goes, she was just laying on her bed laughing.
Wow.
And for me, that's fun, you know, because I think writing, I have a wonderful lady who's my writing coach. And I met her early on in the process, right when our second book was about to come out. And she reached out to me. She's a retired English teacher. She's taught on the college level. She's amazing. And she says, she told me, she sent me a nice little email about my books. And she says, I love your stories. I love how you blend in the scenery, and how she says, I have a hard time believing you're just starting out in this, because you have so many points you hit. And she says, but you are a horrible writer. But a wonderful storyteller. And then she says, and please don't be offended by that. She says, because storytelling is a gift from God. But she said, writing is only a craft. It's just like if you was a bricklayer or a cabinet maker or so. It's a craft that as you practice, you get better. And so that was wonderful for me going into this process, realizing I didn't have to be a writer and that I could worry about capturing that emotion for a kid. I could write a scene that a kid could visualize without worrying about the exact sentence structure, and then go back and fix that. And I think that's why I'm writing so fast now. I used to be a nervous wreck when I'd write, because I didn't want to, am I starting a new paragraph too soon? Am I do this? Or did I do that? Is that sentence, should I have done active or passive there? And I used to worry about that, but now I just write.
Yeah.
And then when I'm finished with the book, I go back and my number one thing is I look back and I don't care about misspelled words. All I'm worried about is was there a chance I could capture someone's emotion? And I think that's the number one, that's what she taught me. And that's the number one thing I think I've done, is just worrying about capturing that emotion. And that's what gets someone lost in your book.
Yeah, so true. And that's what edits are for. I think when I first started writing, I thought that first draft I was done, and I came to realize that was very wrong. And I'm so thankful for the editing process, because you can just get lost in trying to convey the emotion and heart of the story you're trying to write, the adventure you're trying to give, and go back and fix it later. And I have a wonderful editor. She catches all the places I put commas, which is everywhere they shouldn't be, mind you. And she puts them where they should be. And, you know, that's why we have people who help us. But it is so true. That's that part.
I've never used a semicolon in my life writing. And all of a sudden now she'll send me a little note and she'll say, you should add a semicolon there. And I go, I don't even know why I would put a semicolon there. But if you say I should, I should.
Yes.
I've never used one in my life writing. So, you know, in my normal day-to-day stuff. So
of course,
It's wonderful. It's wonderful to have an editor. And now it's probably the thing for me is realizing that's what the editor's for. Just create the story and try not to get too caught up in yourself.
Yes, I love that. And that is just wonderful advice for any writer out there, because I think we have some listeners to this podcast who would love to be authors one day. And so that's a great piece of advice. if you're on your own author journey, for our listeners to keep that in mind, right? And remember, there are editors for a reason, but exactly. To get that heart of the story out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have an editor who she's one of the ladies I used in the past, and she has a wonderful story and how she grew up and everything. And one day I said, are you ever going to write a story? She says, oh, I could never do that. I could never put my emotions on a page, but she has no problem correcting mine. So, you know, so I'm saying, you know, it's just, we all have our guests. Our gift, you know. Yes. So if your gift is storytelling, just tell the story.
Yes. Oh, I love that. So we are quickly running to the top of our 30 minutes here. Oh, shockingly. Wow. I know this has been so fast, but I don't want to wrap up before our listeners can hear a little bit more about you. And if you don't mind sharing, like, what do you do when you're not writing, or what is all of this writing adventure looked like for you? Because you and Jade started this not very many years ago now, and you're full into it at this point.
Yeah, well, I was 43 years in the oil field. I worked offshore. We did a little bit of everything in the oil field. We worked logistics, trucking, aviation logistics. And, you know, through that time, we ran our own little small business. We had several little small businesses. And my writing at that time was contracts and safety manuals. I told some guy how not to fall off of a ladder.
Oh, wow.
That was probably the extent of my writing.
Not storytelling.
Yeah, exactly. So, and it was hard for me because I was a guy who would rather laugh when the guy fell off the ladder than tell him not to do it. So, anyway, but, you know, so that was my beginning, working in the oil field. I never planned on being a writer. Mm-hmm. When I started doing these little short stories for the kids, when we were at the camp one night, you know, I would write on it for a couple of days, and it was horrible writing. When I go back and read them now, the technical part of it was horrible, but the kids loved they knew it was their character. And the more exciting I made it, the more adventurous I made it, the more they loved it. So I think, you know, that was the start of it. And then you're right, we haven't been doing this long. We actually got serious about this when COVID came around, because I had all these short stories, and my wife and kids said one day, Dad, you got to do something with them. And never planned on being a writer. So this has been a really crazy journey. And I will say, for your people who out there who have the intentions of they want to be a writer one day, or they want to be, I really thought I was going to go to my camp on my days off, and I was going to fish in the morning. I was going to write during the day, and then write a little bit more at night, maybe do a little night fishing, and then start over the next day. It's nothing like that. Writing is, it's amazing how much you have to be out there. Mm. And for me, I was never, even when we ran our businesses, I was always the guy behind the scene. Mm. If sales needed to be done, I was going to hire a guy to put his face out there. Or if we needed technical support, I was going to put somebody on a conference call. I've always wanted to be the behind the scenes guy. And I was fortunate I was able to do that my entire life. But as an author, I will give everyone a tip. You cannot be the behind the scenes guy. We had probably the best and most impacting advice I ever got. We were at a conference in Tampa. It was a National Librarians Conference. And I was sitting in between two six-figure authors on both sides of us. And I was brand new. I had my first three books out, and we were there doing a little thing and talking to a lot of teachers and all. And one of them grabbed me by the sleeve and during one of the breaks, and he says, can I talk to you? And I said, sure. And he took me behind one of the curtains. You know, they have the curtain, little curtain things all over the conferences. Yes. He took me behind one of them, and he scolded me. And gave me some tips on what I was doing and what I shouldn't be doing and all this kind of stuff. And he said something that impacted me. And he says, you're acting like authors sell books. And he says, if you continue that, you're going to fail. He said, wow. Books sell authors. He says, you have to get your book so popular that people want to know what you're writing next. You have to get yourself so popular that people can't wait to hear you talk about your next book. He says, you don't sell books. You're going to create something that sells you. Now, Jade and I left there, and we had that feeling that we weren't in Kansas anymore, Toto, because it totally went against the perspective of what we were trying to do. We thought we were going to semi-retire, do this little book project on the side, and we were going to live at our camp and just send the books in to my daughter and our editor, and then we get an email back saying, hey, it's published. It's for sale. That's not the case. So we've had to – and listen, I'm grateful for that, because I think God – At my age, I'm 62. I think it's great that he's still challenging me every day to step outside of what I want to do and what I think I want to do. So, I know that for us, this isn't just a book series for us. It's a vision. It's a missions for us, for Jade and I, to reach out to children and let them know that it's okay to be kids. It's okay to read, pick up a book and read it and not have to go through agendas and garbage and all these different things. Just enjoy a book. So this is a mission for us. And, if it means that I have to change who I am to grow, to be able to do things like this, which I never thought I was going to do a podcast in my entire life. if that's what God's calling me to do, then we've accepted the challenge. If I had to give anybody advice, if you're going to do it as a mission.
I love that. And I couldn't agree more wholeheartedly. What's so beautiful is that you have allowed God to shape it as a mission for you and for Jade. Like when I met you in person, even though you were like, oh, I don't really like doing the in front of people thing, you and Jade were both just so incredibly welcoming to any person who came to your booth. And you exuded this grace and kindness, and your readers feel it. They know that you love them and you do this for them. And that's what makes them want to read your books. It is a beautiful thing to see. Yeah.
Well, it's great having Jade as my cover person, you know, out in front, because she's much prettier and much nicer. And so having her as a lead in makes it a lot easier for me. So
I love it. I love it. Well, we are just about out of time, but for anyone who does want to join in on this adventure with you, could you just share where our readers can find you and your books and connect with you?
Well, the best place to go is www.cajunkids.com. We own the website. We were able to secure it. You can get everything there. Not only can you order the books, but you can read reviews. You can learn more about me. There's a lot of bio stuff on there. Just things you can learn about us, about our series, upcoming events. We have another thing I said I was never going to do was a YouTube channel. I said, that's absolutely ridiculous. You can link onto our YouTube channel, which we were, but my YouTube channel is actually kind of unique in the fact I'm true Cajun and I'm true South Louisiana. I have an airboat. That's how I get around most of my places. Wow. So I go out with the airboat and I do virtual airboat tours, and we go out and we find alligators, and it's fun being able to do that. And also it makes it interactive for the kids that they can, a lot of the parents were saying that they reward their kid after they read a chapter. One of the children there, after they read a chapter, they'll let them go to the YouTube channel and watch me take the airboat out in the marsh.
Oh, you know, how fun.
So it brings that story to life for them. But that's the best way to do it. Our books are also available on Amazon. Ingram Content Group carries our hardbacks. Everybody carries Walmart.com, the BarnesandNoble.com, all those carry our books online. But and then, of course, here in South Louisiana, we have a lot of retailers that have picked up our series. And also for anybody who's listening close to my home, you can go to most of the retailers around here and see them on the shelf.
Oh, perfect. And I do encourage you to check out Chris and Jade and their website. And if you happen to see that they're coming to an area near you, go to that event and meet them in person. They are such a lovely couple. You will enjoy hearing their stories and talking about their books. And they have one of the coolest displays I've seen at a convention. So definitely worth seeing.
Yeah, we do Cajun it up a little bit.
You definitely do. Yeah, I absolutely love it. Great. Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining me today on Read Clean YA with CJ. I had a blast talking with you.
Me too. This was fun. You're making the transition very easy for me. So anyway.
Oh, I'm glad to hear it.
Well, thank you very much.
I hope you enjoyed listening in on this conversation with Chris Landry. Chris and Jade are a sweet couple, and their heart to provide excellent stories that engage their readers is inspiring. If you have a young reader, or if you're looking for a family-friendly adventure to read out loud with your whole family, I encourage you to check out Chris's books. Thank you so much for listening to Read Clean YA with CJ. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend so they can discover exciting, clean, young adult and middle grade books too.